With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
McNally.
Lang.
McNally.
Boulay.
That's cool, actually.
John, that's one of his pet peeves when people...
Yeah, that's,
he can't.
But I don't understand why people would think it's Boulay, because there's no accent on the E.
You're right, but in Irish, like that's, I think there was a penguin Irish character called Boulay, and it was spelled like that. But you're right, there was a fada on the E. So you're totally right.
Yeah.
I walked up to a show once and my name was in like letters over the door and they'd written Joanna McNulty and it was my own show. So.
Quite like that. McNulty. Joanna McNulty sounds like a naughty hamburger or something.
McNulty. McNulty. Nulty.
Okay, McNally. I hear what you're saying. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to part two of Private Parts. We're still here with Joanne McNulty. And there was a callback. Did you like the callback I just did? I just did a little bit of a callback.
I don't know if it's that much of a callback.
Just the end of the same sentence.
Pressure cooker. There's another callback. That's a callback to part one, everybody.
You're the albino, Bill Burr. Right.
Can I tell you something? Do you know what I found out? So I'm obviously in Spain, as you heard from my diary. You know, in Spain, most of the restaurants, they don't have loo seats. They don't have any loo seats. So I found this out that I went to the loo to go and take a poop, right? And they don't have them. It's just completely bare. And I was like, what? So you have to either squat on it and try and hold the lock of the door to kind of like balance yourself, or you have to go bareback on it, which is vile because you know what's been on. But the way you get the loo seat is you have to go to the bar and ask for it. You have to go to the bar.
What?
You have to, you have to go to the bar and ask for the loo seat and take that to, I'm like, what do you mean? So you have to, so it's bad enough having to go and ask for loo paper when you need like the bar because everyone knows you. How the, if you're on like a date and you go to the bar and ask for the loo seat, how the hell you walk back through the restaurant holding a loo seat? Oh, dear.
I would have thought a man of your status, Jamie, would be frequenting venues that supply you with a loo seat. Like, where are you going for dinner in a petrol station? Where are you going for dinner?
It's like in most places. I now bring my own loo seat like a bowling ball.
That's so embarrassing. Oh, my God.
And you can't, like, hide it. You have to, like, put one arm through it and take it. Also, so unhygienic. You don't clean it after you've used it, and then you hand it back to, like, the... This is totally true. I think it's the most outrageous thing I've ever heard.
And especially, it's worse for women, because we're constantly at the start of a relationship pretending we don't even have an anus. Do you know what I mean? You're, like, denying all your bodily functions.
No,
and you drag a toilet seat through the restaurant in front of them. Scarlet!
I don't think that's quite true, because any time you're at the start of a relationship and you both get drunk together, the guy always says, can I put it in the bum?
Yeah, they want to put things in the bum, but at the start, they're not interested in coming out of it. Let's be clear. We all know that now. Come on.
Why does that happen? Why are guys obsessed with the anus when it comes to sex?
I know. I asked my ex and he was like, I think it's really intimate. And I was like, well, I'm staring at the wall, so I don't know how that's intimate because I can't see anything. Like, maybe we could hang a photo of you on the wall so I have something to look at. I could look you in the eyes.
Is that, was that his excuse? His excuse?
Yeah.
Joanne, so what has lockdown been like for you? Have you dated anyone, done virtual dates or anything like that?
No, I kind of got going again. And I had a couple of dates in London before lockdown, but then lockdown happened. I was like, what's the point? What's he going to do? Knock around and pet my hair through the letterbox. Like, it just seems pointless. And I don't want a pen pal.
Wait, what's he going to do? Pet my hair through a letterbox?
Yes, we can't touch.
Yes, it's illegal for people to have sex now.
Sex is illegal now.
What if you wear like sort of like plastic gloves or something?
But doesn't that make it so much hotter, Joanne?
Getting patted through the letterbox. No, I'm not a cat.
No. illicit, illegal sex, right? Isn't it more exciting?
I was doing I did a little Comedy Central sketch about it, and I was like, there was a time where you just had to wear one plastic condom, and now you have to wear, you have to try and keep it sexy while you put on plastic
hazmat
12 suit. Tentacles. And we're going to need like little tongue condoms now as well. I mean, would you even be arsed? But I had.
No, you did have to wear tongue condoms. That's
well,
a
it's, that's how you. No, I'm, of course.
Jamie.
Jamie,
you should go into business. You should make them.
Oh my God, I can't wait.
So I went on a couple of dates, but like, I don't know, I wasn't really in the groove. I had, you know, there was like London lads, it takes a bit of getting used. We take a bit of getting used to each other, you know.
Wait, so explain, what's the difference between London lads and Irish lads?
I don't know. I find that, now this is just the London lads I've met.
Okay.
I'm excluding you guys. They're quite serious. Now, they're just the ones that I happen to have met. And Irish men are not serious at all. They're kind of clownish. So it's been a little adjustment. Like one guy, he wouldn't give me I had a one night stand with this guy. It was so weird. So I was in a relationship for years, right? About 5 or 6 years. And then I came out of it. And I'd never had that like promiscuous stage. So I thought, right, I'm going to have my promiscuous stage in London. You know, I'm in my 30s now. I'm an independent woman.
I'm woke. I'm very woke.
Yeah. I'm progressive, you know. I'm going to have this one night stand. So I went on a date with this guy. We'll call him Ben because that was his name. He was a photographer. He's probably still on Hinge. You'll find him. So
he was a photographer.
Yeah. Red flag. Yeah.
Wait, that's not also manly. If you're going for a manly guy, he says photographer underneath. What is that? You're not going to build your shelf or something.
He's very arty, you know. He's a serious guy. So
went
to date anyway, and I was like, "This is it. I'm gonna," you know. I was like, we were getting on really well. Obviously, we were both pissed out of our faces, and I was like. He was like, let's do it again. I was like, yeah. And then he was like, I'll go back to yours. And it was like, because you know, when you're younger, you feel that men, they're only after one thing, blah, blah, blah. And if you have sex too soon, they lose interest. And it's not a nice part of our culture, but it does seem to be a thing. And I don't have the explanations of why, but that was always the thing when I was younger. So I would like hold out, you know, and manipulate them into loving me and then have sex with them.
But also, can I just, before you go into that story, it is totally true, and I agree with that people are like that. But I don't understand the concept of when women will sort of say, I'm not having sex with you, so you can't put it in my vagina, but you can put it in my head, because that doesn't count. So you'll give it like a blowjob, but they'll say, we're not going to have sex. Isn't that what happens?
It's a trailer. It's like we're getting
you
out.
You sound like you've used this argument really angrily with a girl.
I also love the fact you're calling it a trailer. Oh, there you go. This is what it could be like.
Yeah, it's the canapé. It's the taster. It's the vol-au-vent of the bedroom.
Because
we want to have sex as well, but we're worried that you'll fuck off. Because previously that is what's happened, you know? Not everyone. Sure. I know couples who are married who had sex on their first date. Like, it varies. But anecdotally, with my current experience, previous experience.
As a general rule.
Exactly, right? So anyway, he started just losing interest straight away. But I was kind of pissed. And I was like, no, this is fine. I'm committed. I'm a progressive modern woman. So we went back. And literally with every thrust, he lost interest more and more and more and more. And by the time it was finished, he was not interested at all. And then I stayed over. And then the next morning, he was back on his phone. And I was like, oh, are you on Hinge? Messing. And he was like, no, I'm just checking some emails. And I was like, I need to get the fuck out of here. Then I said, here, obviously, I'd only moved to London. Didn't have a clue where I was. The other reason I went home with him was because I didn't know where I lived. So I was like, I'll just leave here. London's so big. I'll just go home with him and then get the tube tomorrow or whatever. So I woke up. I might as well have been in Zimbabwe. Didn't have a clue where I was. in bed with this man who now slightly despised me. So I was like, oh, Joanne, get out, get out. So I was like, here, come here, Ben, do you drive? And he's like, yeah. I said, do you have a car? And he's like, yeah. And then he goes, Joanne, I'm not driving you anywhere.
No.
And I said,
terrible.
I was like, wow. And I said, and he goes, my ego would not allow it. And I was like, what does that mean? And he's like, oh, it was a joke, Joanne. I didn't mean to be, I didn't want to be asked about it again. And I was like, that's gas, because I write jokes for a living, and that was shite. So what do you want? And he's like,
yeah. He said he wouldn't drive you because you didn't anywhere. Sleep with him.
No, I did sleep with him.
Why would
he gave a great performance. Gave it my all. Eye contact, noises, the whole shebang. Like, I really went for it. I did the noise. Did the noise.
You did the drowning. Hey, another.
Call back.
Oh,
no, I'm going to call. I'm so close. He was like, my ego wouldn't allow it. And I was like, stop. I'm going to
wrap. Doesn't even make sense.
Right, exactly, Francis.
I just can't get it. Oh, I'm so close. Oh, God. That is too good.
He said, my ego wouldn't allow it. And I was like, what do you mean? And he was like, look, Joanne, driving you anywhere would be an unprecedented act of chivalry. And I just don't feel that way about you yet.
So have you seen him again, this guy Ben?
No, I genuinely thought, because I just left then. I genuinely thought he'll message me to say, I mean, obviously we were never going to be romantically involved again, but I thought he'd message to go, listen, sorry, that was a bit weird, you know, whatever. Never heard from him again. He's still floating around in the world of Hinge, so look out, ladies.
And maybe that's his full-time thing.
Being an asshole.
On Hinge.
Yeah, maybe.
Feel like what a douchebag.
Be careful out there, ladies.
Be careful out there. I mean, drive me home. You know you're never going to see me again. Drive me home out of guilt. Do you know what I mean? Like, just clear your conscience.
It would suck if you were called Ben and a photographer and you weren't that guy. And then anyone who listened to this.
Is it libel?
No, because he didn't name his actual... It's libel to all Bens, I suppose.
Yeah.
Photographers.
We did have Lloyd Griffiths. Friend of all of us, I'm sure.
Friend of all of us.
He was listening to our podcast before he came on, and I was talking about a comedian that I met who broke up with a girl, and me talking about how sorry I felt for him. He was listening to it and realised that it was him. When I was listening to it, he was like, "Oh shit, that's me. That's me." That he's being empathetic and sympathetic towards. Yeah, yeah. And I was talking about Lloyd and having broken up with his girlfriend, but I couldn't remember what his name was.
Did he break up with his girlfriend? I didn't know that.
No, it was ages ago.
Oh yeah, okay, grand.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
But also, Joanne, with you, you know, even though you do stand-up and stuff like that, you also, you know, you write, like, a lot of stuff. And you,
I do.
You know, you wrote your own one woman play, didn't you?
I did. I wrote a theatre. At the time, I wasn't sure. So the reason I got into stand-up was because I was working in public relations full-time. And I was very unwell. I went completely insane with eating disorders. I was in a ward, right? But I was I went in as a psychiatric patient, but I was just there as a day patient. So I was in there like Monday to Friday. And then in the evening, I was free to just wander around and be insane. And because of that, I'd had to quit my job. And then my friend, she's a director of theatre, and she encouraged me to kind of write a show about what was going on. So I wrote a one woman dark comedy theatre piece about bulimia called Bite Me, which I toured around Ireland for a couple of years, actually, and brought it to Edinburgh and stuff. So it was great.
But you know, and me, you and I have spoken about this before. I think a huge huge admire you for doing something like that, because you know, there's a lot of, especially a lot of female listeners who listen to this who possibly are going through the same thing or experience the same thing or whatever, and you know, with eating disorders. But the fact that you were, you know, and most people, what they do is they have it and they keep it very private and quiet because they're either embarrassed or worried or what people think of them. And actually speaking about it is far more powerful than anything else.
Yeah.
And the fact that you wrote a play about it, the response you must have got from people must have been amazing, right? Because you're putting yourself out there massively.
Yeah. I was so glad to be starting up my career as a performer that, and as a performer and a comic, you always mine your own life. So it made sense that I would talk about it. Also, I think when you talk about something and laugh at it, you kind of, you disempower it. But there were parts in the show that I did, that director wanted me to put in, that I felt uncomfortable putting in, and I felt very vulnerable and exposed saying them. But I did it anyway. She was like, I think it's important. But I had lied about it for so long as well. Like, I was sick for about, I'd say kind of, I was, you know, spinning the plug hole of absolute madness for about 8 years. And then I had like a proper breakdown. And then so I couldn't lie about it anymore. Whereas a lot of people I know who have eating disorders or people who contact me, they're functioning with eating disorders. So it's like a functioning alcoholic. Like they're living their life and maybe they're just purging their dinner every night or they're purging all the weekends, but no one can tell. And with bulimia as well, your weight maintains. Now I was anorexic and bulimic, so it was obvious I was unwell because I was very underweight. But with bulimics, sometimes their weight stays the same or they can end up putting on weight. So it's not as obvious. But I lied and lied and lied and lied. But then once I admitted it, it was such a
cathartic.
Relief. Yeah. I couldn't stop admitting it. I was like, people have asked me in the street, how are you? And I'd be like, bulimic. Like I was just on one then. It was really all I wanted to talk about. Yeah. Which I think it's part of the process, you know?
Yeah. And I think that's the thing, when you have like a secret like that, and then you get on stage and tell the world, it's like, it's no longer, you know, something, you know, like you say, it immunizes the power from it.
Exactly. And like even saying it to my friends, like everyone knew, but admitting it was part of the process of getting better.
Yeah. And do you think, you know, because you can, I suppose you can relate that, and you know, we spoke a lot of different things on this podcast, but you know, when do you think you can relate that to a lot of other disorders that people have, whether it's anxiety or feeling sad or whatever it is? As soon as you start speaking about it, actually that is the beginning process to actually starting to heal almost, isn't it?
I think once you recognize what it is, I honestly was convinced that I was just on a diet. I thought when I started vomiting my food, I thought I discovered, like, I was like, I've got the key, I've got the secret. Like that's the theme tune to the play, because I genuinely thought I had cocked, like I had the secret to life, you know?
You're like, why is everyone not doing this?
I couldn't.
I have a pizza, see you later.
I know. I'm like, why is no one going to the toilet? I couldn't. I'd watch women eat a sandwich and I'm like, what are they up to? Why are they still sitting there? Like, why are they pretending they're keeping that down? Like, I genuinely, like, it's like any addiction. The addiction becomes it just invades your brain and it consumes you. So I was happier sitting at home in my mother's bedroom, because obviously I'd had to move out of my own house, go back to my mum's, quit my job, and I was living up in her attic.
Very Anne Frank again.
Cool. So I called Joanne Frank. That was, I used it in stand-up. And but I couldn't understand how everyone was going out in the world and like they were ingesting calories all day and living their lives. I couldn't get my head around it. I lost boyfriends, I lost jobs, I lost friendships, didn't care. It was all that mattered to me. Shrink, 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 shrink.
It's interesting because, you know, when you're in a certain place like that mentally, right, and it doesn't matter what sort of thing you're going through, you can't understand why everyone else is not thinking the same as you. And you're kind of going like, you must be feeling the same way as me, because why am I feeling that and you're not feeling the same thing?
Exactly.
And so you're just thinking everyone's in that same place. And you find it really hard to understand when people don't think the same way. And that's quite tricky as well, because then when you find out people aren't thinking the same way as you, you then feel even more alienated, because you're like, hang on a second, what the hell? I feel like a total alien here.
And when people would say I was too thin, I thought they were jealous. I thought my friends were just jealous, because I couldn't understand why they wouldn't want to be as thin as me. My only motivation was to be thin. So I assumed that everyone else's motivation was also to be. I was like, I joked about it. I was like, I wanted to get back to my birth weight of 7 pounds and 3 ounces. Like, I was on one. And the more they comment on my weight, that's why I always say, if there's someone with an eating disorder, if you know someone with an eating disorder, don't ever say you look too thin. You're saying it like crying, going, I'm really worried you look too thin. But all we hear is, you look too thin. So it's like a compliment.
It's like a positive
way.
Yeah.
It's a positive way.
Instead, what people used to say to me was, you look really unwell. And that was harder to hear, because I didn't want to look unwell. I just wanted to look, I thought thin was hot. The thinner you were, the hotter you were.
No, listen, John, I completely commend you on it. And when we spoke about it, I just thought it was such a great thing that you did, and amazing that you were like spoken about it, because, you know, being in sort of the industry, people don't talk about stuff because they try and hide it. And actually, the most important thing is to speak out and be honest about these certain things, whatever you're going through. So I think it's a really great thing that you did that.
And that's the really cool thing about comedy. Like, no matter how dark your experiences are, and all these experiences build you into the person that you are, and it gives you edges that maybe you wouldn't have had before, which means you've more material to explore and to write about.
Yeah.
So that's the great thing about stand-up. Everything's material. Like, that's what people say to you as well. When you don't really want to hear it, like, maybe your whole family's been wiped out by an avalanche, and somebody would be like, but it's great material, isn't it?
Well, something like that also, I suppose, you don't know who in the audience is also dealing with a problem like that. So, you know, you talking about it openly makes them think, oh, well, maybe, you know, maybe it's not normal. Maybe I should.
I kind of stopped doing the show. Well, firstly, we toured the venues, like the tour had finished, but I was slightly glad to finish it because it would attract, obviously, girls mostly who were maybe suffering with the same thing. And I'd see them in the audience and I don't know, it just got a bit sad, to be honest. And they'd be mailing and you'd always reply, and it kind of takes a bit out of you, because you're also going, I don't know. Like, I really don't know how to fix it.
Yeah, it's my own experience. I can't help you with it.
And you'd have parents looking for help and all. And it's, you know, but I think that's the thing. If you do make a show about something like that, or an addiction or something, you're always going to obviously attract people who have the same experience, which is what you want. But sometimes it can get a bit much.
No, listen, I give you a clap from over here, Joanne.
Thank you.
I think it's amazing. Hey, Francis, it's now for that time in the podcast where we have the answer to the question of the week.
So do you remember what the question was, Joanne?
AIDS. No, I'm thinking. Neil Armstrong, what did he do when he came down from space?
And you said a decompression chamber.
Yes.
And Jamie, what did you say?
I said it's something that he had to sign something, or he had to go to court, or he had to do something that to prove that he went into space, something along those lines.
To prove that he went into space?
Yeah, something like that. He had to do something
to prove. For the conspiracy theorists.
Something like that, that's what I meant.
Well, he landed, obviously, in America, and he had to go through customs and immigration.
No,
he didn't.
Yes, he did.
With his passport?
With his passport, yeah.
No, he didn't.
Yes, because he was out of US airspace.
What?
Yeah.
That casual chat with Neil Armstrong as he came through picking up his bag. Where have you been? Well, you know, quite sweet. Little casual chat with him. I love
that. They thought he was like bringing Coke back from Mars. Yeah, like, that's ridiculous.
Oh, sure. You've been to the moon. Right.
Yeah.
Right, Mr. Armstrong. Step this way.
Hey, Joanne, listen, we've taken up far too much of your time. Are you going to be going on tour or anything like that when everything comes back up and working?
So my Irish tour is rescheduled for September. But I mean, it's kind of problematic, though, obviously, because the rooms are going to have to be smaller. I don't know.
And you'll be playing to small crowds.
I know. Not a lot of money in small crowds, Francis.
Oh, we know all too well from our tour.
So annoying. You're like, hello, is this thing on? Hello. I'm supposed to do. I was supposed to do three nights in Soho in April, though. We'll see. We're just waiting for it to kick back up again.
You're one of the funniest people I know, so I just can't. As soon as you're back on tour, we'll be there supporting you from the crowd.
Thank you, Jamie. You're very sweet. Yeah. Thank you.
That was me. That was me just fluffing you up at the end, just there.
I know. You're also very funny. That's me fluffing.
Yeah, and I'm gonna get
Hey, where's my fluffing?
Bring it over.
Bye. I have to go. Hey. Bye, lad. Thanks for now.
Hey, Joanne, listen, before we end the podcast, what we like to do is leave our listeners with something inspirational.
Oh, for God's sake. Are you serious?
Yeah, come on. Bring it home for us. Home run it.
You want me to say something inspirational?
Yeah, home run it, honey.
Okay. Do you know what? Swap red wine for gin. Because it's got less sugar. Is this not what you mean?
This is great. I like this. Yeah.
So red wine is like, I read it yesterday because I put on a few pounds, which I don't really care about anymore, but I still was like, oh, maybe I should do something with that. And I Googled it and it said that red wine is like liquidized sugar. So I was like, I'll move to gin because that, I know that's like liquidized paranoia, but I was like, I think it's kind of better. So I would swap red alcohol for white. That would be my inspiration.
That's great. Joanne McNally, thank you so much. We'll see everybody next week.
Owen, be yourself. Okay, bye.
Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.